Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk distribution is made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. Approaching retirement? If you have questions about your retirement that you'd like to ask directly to Steve or Justin, like when to take Social Security, how funds should be distributed, mandatory distributions from your IRA, they set aside time each day to answer specific questions like these. And you can send them a note. Just click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin on InvestTalk.com. Now, today's InvestTalk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to InvestTalk. This is our Monday, April 18th, 2016 edition of InvestTalk. And it's about above average investing. That's our goal each and every weekday on InvestTalk, is to try to make sure you make good financial decisions. It's not always easy. I get that. And it's something that takes some discipline. And that's the number one thing we try to get across each and every weekday, is can you have the discipline to be successful? Do you have that mentality? Are you a gambler? A lot of people are gamblers and they just don't know how to make good decisions. Their emotions just always get the best of them, right? They always swing from fear to greed, and they look for home runs constantly instead of singles and doubles. And frankly, investing in the markets are really about singles and doubles, not about home runs and grand slams. Okay, so there's some questions that you need to ask yourself. Like, how much did the average investor earn between 1988 and 2008? Well, the S&P 500 earned an average annual return of 8.4% during that period. So $1 would become $5. Now, the average investor earned an annual return of just 1.9% per year. So $1 came about $1.50. So what's wrong with this picture? And you're going to say, what do you mean? How could the average investor only make that much? 2%. Well, because they make bad decisions. They buy high, they sell low. They chase returns. They look at short-term swings and extrapolate them long-term. They think what happened over the last 2, 3, 4 years is what's going to happen over the next 2, 3, or 4 years. And the odds are very different. So we want to help you escape the ranks of the average investor. And this is a journey that begins with your desire to learn and improve your decision-making skills constantly. So we do. We are constantly learning about the market, different companies, different sectors, trading techniques, allocation techniques, and all this helps us improve our decision making. So how do you measure a potential good investment? What's the criteria that you look at? The criteria is different between investors as well. Are you a growth investor? Are you a long-term buy and hold value investor? Or are you a trader, a short-term trader? If you're a short-term trader, fundamentals don't matter that much, if at all. It's all about the chart. So first thing you need is a goal and then a plan that matches that goal. If you're a short-term trader and you're looking at fundamentals like balance sheets, earnings, growth, revenues, profitability, etc., you're looking at the wrong thing. You are. If you're a long-term investor, charts probably have something to do with your decision-making, but it's not first on the list. It's way down the list after you go through all the fundamental analysis. So maybe we can help you formulate a plan. So no, it doesn't matter what type of investor you are. You can be a trader, you can be a long-term investor, whatever it is. We have the expertise to help get you along in that plan. So we're here to be a sounding board for your questions about investing strategies, personal financial choices, whatever that is. So before you can actually define your investing goals, you need to ask yourself what you want to achieve. Is your goal a down payment on a house, paying for college, retirement, maybe something else? What is it? Okay, that's where you start, and then you build from there. So writing down practical and attainable investing goals, make them more real. Write them down. That's the first step in achieving, I think, almost any goal, is to write it down. Because then it becomes tangible. You see it, you feel it, you think about it. I have my goals, I have a board, and I write my goals down. And I see those, maybe not every day I look at it, but almost every day. So then you divide your investing or savings goals into short-term, medium-term, and then long-term goals. Decide how much you'll need to achieve each one. And based on your goals, figure out how much money you'll need for each one. So for example, long-term goals, you have maybe a different investing and savings approach versus your short-term goals, because your short-term goals, you're going to need liquidity. So your investing strategy will be different. So the options for investing our savings are continually increasing. So if you've been following the investment world for a very long time, you see that for yourself. 30 years ago, there was no such thing as an ETF. Now there's thousands of them. So these choices offer added benefits, but they also need to be understood. The risks need to be understood. They're not all great tools. So you have to evaluate them, read about them, research them, talk to others. And when I say talk to others, not just me or Steve, get multiple opinions. Now, every single investment vehicle can be easily categorized according to three fundamental characteristics. How do they measure up when you think about them in terms of safety, income, and growth? Safety, income, and growth. I mean, you have to ask your question, how safe is this investment? And that includes liquidity. Can you sell it? How much income is it generating me? And then what's the growth potential of it? I'm sure you ask yourself that when you're talking about your home or a real estate investment. Same thing with a stock. What's the growth potential? Now, as I said, unless you have goals clearly defined, it's impossible to make good choices. So which is your number one objective? Safety, income, or growth? Maybe a combination of them. Sure, you can have more than one objective, but they have to be prioritized. What's goal number one? One might be achieved at the expense of another. For example, income. I see this a lot in today's world. Everyone's chasing income. They're trying to get 6, 7, 8, 9% yield. Well, if you're getting that in this environment, what are you sacrificing? You're sacrificing safety. Okay? So let's talk about your objectives today. Love to hear about your portfolio. Is your number one goal safety? Is it income? Is it growth? You think your portfolio is the best possible mix of assets to achieve that particular goal? Let's talk about it. Vestalk is a question and answer program. We're here to help you answer some of the more important money questions in your life. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number for any money-related questions. Let's take on a question right now.
Hello, this is Corey out of Louisiana. I'm curious as to what your opinion is short-term, mid, and long-term on the value of Sprint Corporation. I'm a non-risk-averse investor, and I'm just, they have a lot of interesting, you know, executive moves and acquisition recently by the foreign company, and I just wanted to see what your opinion of Sprint Corporation was. Thank you.
All right, he's looking at Sprint. Most people know who they are. They're kind of a third tier, our third biggest wireless carrier in America. And he said he's non-risk averse, meaning he's willing to take a good amount of risk. Short term, I'm not a big fan of it. You know, the chart is in a downtrend. It's had a little bit of a rally. They're not profitable. They haven't been profitable for many, many years. I don't like that. Their cash flow has been negative since 2012, and it's only getting worse. They have a good amount of debt on their balance sheet, and it's only really increasing. So I'm not liking that. Their return on equity is pretty much flat to negative. Not good. It's getting a little better, but they still have a lot of issues. So I think short, medium, and long term, I'm not a fan of Sprint Corporation. Now, we're glad you're with us today for Invest Talk. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein. Steve will be doing individual reviews via Skype and telephone on the 19th of this month, so you can hook up with him no matter where you live. To get on the schedule, just go to investtalk.com, click on the Invest Talk tab. Let's go to George in San Jose. How you doing, George?
Good afternoon, Justin. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for making it.
Seagate Technology just recently pre-announced the coming earnings in a negative way.
Mm-hmm.
Its stock is paying 9.5% almost dividend. Do you think with the circumstances for the disk drive in the marketplace and selling computer going constantly down, that dividend is sustainable? And do you see any entry points for Seagate? I listened to the radio.
Okay. Thanks for calling, George. Thanks. He's asking about Seagate Technologies. STX is the symbol. And this is a company that does pay a nice dividend. However, their payout ratio is now kind of dangerously high. It's over 100%. So it means that they're going to, over the long term, have to borrow money to pay that dividend. Now, in the short run, they do have cash flow to pay that dividend. So I don't think the dividend is susceptible in the short term. But I do think, you know, if their earnings, which are over the last 12 months has fallen from $5.26 in 2015 to $1.99. So they're certainly not doing nearly as well as they were just a few quarters ago. So sales are down 19%, earnings are down 39%. Things are certainly in a decline. This is not a safe dividend paying stock. Is it a stock that might be worth taking a risk on? I actually think it might. They still have good cash flow, even though their earnings fell. Their cash flow still remains positive. And so for that reason, you know, I'm kind of okay with it. But technically, it continues to do poorly, and it continues to break down. If I were to give it an entry point, let me give it an entry point here. I'm going to say that entry point is $20. Now it's at $25.78. $20 a share would be my entry point. And then I give it probably till about $17 or so, $16.50, as my out. And I think that would be a good risk-reward scenario at $20 a share. That was Seagate Technologies. STX is the symbol. This is Invest Talk, a place to talk about your money, the various aspects of managing your money. I know you have questions. What's a bond? How much risk is there in the bond market? What types of bonds are most productive, most risky? Let's talk about it. 888-99-CHART. Let's go to Sam in the Bay Area. He wants to talk about LinkedIn. How you doing, Sam? Doing well. What can I do for you?
Good. What's your opinion about LinkedIn? We've had a little bit of a drop recently. It's picking up a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
What if I buy in? Am I catching a falling knife, or is that a good entry point?
Well, from a technical perspective, it's big drop. And for everybody out there that isn't privy to what happened to LinkedIn, hit a high in the 250 and change range in November and had a downtrend into earnings on early February. And at that time, it was trading at about $190 a share. And the next day after earnings, it dropped and closed at $108 a share. So a huge drop after earnings, about 45% drop in the stock. I mean, and from the high, you're talking about a 60% drop or so from where it was just about four or five months ago. So their growth prospects diminished. Their guidance was poor. And really, it just looks like the LinkedIn platform is slowing down and their monetization ability is slowing down. Technically, I'm not seeing anything that's telling me that LinkedIn is going to turn itself around quickly. It's still kind of on the expensive side. I think from a long-term perspective, I think LinkedIn will be around and it'll still be good and it'll still have decent cash flow, but it's still expensive at these levels. I mean, over the past 12 months, they have about $300 million in free cash flow on a $15 billion market cap. That's after a 60% drop. So that's a 2% free cash flow yield. That's not that high. It's still too low for me. So from a valuation perspective, from a technical perspective, I think it continues to head lower. What's getting you interested in it, besides the drop?
I've made money on LinkedIn in the past, and LinkedIn has done this before. It dropped on news, and then over a span of time, over the next 18 months or 24 months, it's climbed up again. Mm-hmm. That's what got me interested again. See the light goes up.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it has done that, but this breakdown from a technical perspective is much worse than any of those. And right. You know, could it rebound? Sure, it could. But this is, I don't know if you even listen to the show much, but this is a growth name, and growth stocks are now kind of out of favor, or they're not going to outperform like they have over the past 5 or 6 years. It's going to be the value stock market. And sure, could you make money on LinkedIn? Yes, you can, but it's going to have those kind of headwinds in front of it. And if we go into recession, there's less people out there looking for new job applicants and less recruiting going on, because that's where LinkedIn really makes its money, is through recruiting. Then LinkedIn will certainly get hit even more. So I'm just not a fan of LinkedIn yet. At some point, it'll be worthwhile, but not at these levels, at least in the long term. Thanks, Sam. Now, there's a big change coming for securities licensed professionals who have escaped fiduciary accountability under the old definition. So soon it will be the law that investors' interests must come first. And that's what we always place places the highest importance at KP Financial, is investors' interests first. And now every advisor, every broker is going to have to do that. If you don't know that, it wasn't the case before this ruling, and when it just got completed by the Department of Labor, and it's going to be rolled out here over the next 12 months. So it's something important I think everybody needs to understand about the investment landscape to come. So that's our main talking point today, but I also want to talk about some other things like taxes. It is tax day. So how are your federal income tax dollars spent? I think it'll be good to go over this, what this exactly, where your dollars go. The average household pays about $13,000 in income tax to Uncle Sam for the 2015 tax year. Where does that money go? What percent to each program? I think it's important to know where your money's going. And then Sun Edison, there's some lessons there that I think we all can take away from its bankruptcy and why you need to be careful about these story stocks. We talk about this all the time. People get burned by story stocks, the exciting name, but the best investments are usually not the exciting names. So we're going to talk about that. You know, that you learn best from failures as opposed to successes. And SUNE, Sun Edison, is one of those failures. And then finally, if we have time, 12 things not to do on tax day today. Now, you're listening to Invest Talk. Have you used your free risk, our free risk analysis tool on investtalk.com? It's an eye-opener for a lot of people. Just click on the Invest Talk tab on investtalk.com. 888-99 chart is our anytime number, and you can call it right now.
We thank you for subscribing to our podcast. A reminder that Steve will be on Skype and telephone all day April 19th tomorrow for individual retirement reviews. It's a handy way to take advantage of a second opinion being offered by a registered investment advisor to a limited number of our podcast subscribers. To get on the schedule, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab.
888-99 chart, 888-992-4278. That's how you get through and ask your question on today's show. We have about 25 minutes left in the show to get your call in, so give us a call if you have any money-related questions. Try to do it sooner rather than later. Now let's take a quick look at the markets today. You had the S&P up 13 points, the NASDAQ was up 21, the Dow was up 106, and you had oil, it started down, and then it kind of slowly rallied up. Gold was down slightly, about a buck. It was really an interesting day, an odd day, because you had, over the weekend, all the oil ministers of OPEC get together in Doha, and talk about output. And a lot of people were expecting them to cut output so they could boost prices and hopefully share in more revenue for them all. However, they decided not to. They couldn't agree on who would cut production. And frankly, I don't think they will, because they want to maintain their market share. And the reason is because they're no longer the swing producer. They used to be the swing producer. Now in the market, it's shale. So if they cut production, right? They cut production and boost prices, it just means that more shale will stay online or come online, and they will take market share in the global market from OPEC. And OPEC doesn't want that and can't afford it. And they know over time that the high-cost producers in the shale space will be pushed out because of lower prices, and they're naturally going to push prices up. So the prospect that they were going to cut, I think, was low, and it turned out to be so, and that's why you saw the market not react too much. You know, it's kind of buy the rumor, sell the news, but I don't think anybody really expected that much of a production cut, if at all, out of Saudi Arabia or OPEC. So, you know, the markets continue to have this really rally off of the mid-February lows. You still haven't made a higher high. We're still in the lower high scenario, which means we're technically still in a downtrend, even though it might seem like everything's nice and hunky-dory, but we're not quite there yet. So I still remain somewhat cautious. So let's talk a little bit about our main talking point, and that's about the Department of Labor ruling that came out on April 6th. It took 5 years for them to do this. And what this does is that it requires securities licensed personnel to adopt a fiduciary standard for the first time. And what fiduciary means is they have to put your interest or their client's interest above their own. Now, many, and I would probably say most of the advisors out there, and I'm talking to you if you have an advisor that is not a registered investment advisor, maybe a broker with one of the big brokerage firms out there, They are probably governed under what is called the suitability standard. And the suitability standard means that as long as that investment is suitable for you, they're allowed to recommend it or buy it for you in your account. It doesn't matter if they get huge commissions, if they get big kickbacks, if they get something that benefits them. Okay? As long as it's suitable for you, meaning if you're an aggressive investor, as long as it's an aggressive type of investment, doesn't matter how much kickbacks they get. So you can see what type of conflict of interest that can create. I use the analogy, it's like a shirt, right? There's a lot of t-shirts in the world, just like there's a lot of investment vehicles in the world. Now, if you're governed under the suitability standard, all that's saying is that your advisor needs to figure out what size you are. If you're a large, he can recommend any large shirt out there for you to buy. Doesn't matter whether he gets a kickback from the manufacturer of that shirt. He can come to you and say, you need to wear this large shirt. And you go, okay, great, you're my advisor. I'm going to wear this large shirt. And he doesn't even need to tell you that you're paying $25 for that shirt. Well, he gets $5 because he sold it to you. Whereas under the fiduciary standard, it needs to be the best shirt that he can think of. And he has to say why. And he can't accept kickbacks because that's not in your best interest as the client. So that's what we are governed under as registered investment advisors. We are governed under the suitability standard, the fiduciary standard, meaning we have to put our clients ahead of ourselves by law. So this new ruling, by the 12 months from now, April 10th, will be in effect, and it will affect pretty much anyone who provides investment advice for compensation. This is a big change for the industry. And you're going to see a lot of changes, and when it comes to investment vehicles and things that they will and can recommend to you. Okay, so I think it's important for everyone to understand this ruling, what it means. It also applies to the 401k space as well. And there's a lot of conflicts of interest in that space also. So just a kind of FYI, hopefully an eye-opener for you, to understand what the difference is and what we're moving towards as an industry. Now, our phone is always open to your questions, whether you're new to investing or have a more advanced question. Doesn't matter what it is. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278 is our anytime number.
Hey, Steve and Justin. I'm a podcast listener. And I had a question. With the markets continuing higher and nearing last year's peak, is it time to take off my downside protection, such as PSQ, RWM positions, and put it to work with the cash I had sitting out? If so, do you see a sector you're bullish on or that's undervalued? Thank you.
I would say no. It's not the time to take off your protections. We, like I said earlier, we still are in a lower high and lower low environment. We are still in an environment where the credit markets are not acting great. We're in an environment where earnings are falling, and that's not an environment that you want to be taking off shorts. In fact, you probably want to be adding shorts, meaning hedges in this environment. So no, I would say relax a little, keep your protections. I know you're down over the last couple months in them, and you're gonna take that pain. And you know, as long as you're allocated broadly and correctly, you should be fine. So don't panic out of your shorts. Now sign up for InvestTalk Insider Program. It's free. You'll have instant access to a library of webinars, which includes our most recent one, Surviving and Finding Opportunities, Survival and Opportunity in a Volatile Market. It'll be available later this week to our InvestTalk Insider subscribers. So if you aren't a subscriber, just sign up for free on InvestTalk.com. Click on the InvestTalk tab.
How are you going to spend your tax refund? Start or build an emergency fund? Clear credit card debt? Save for retirement? Open a 529 college savings plan for your children? Need some more ideas? 888-99-CHART is our 24-hour, anytime number.
Hey, Stephen, Justin, this is James from Minnesota. Appreciate your show. It's great. My wife and I are moving to the great state of Florida here pretty soon, and we're thinking about purchasing our first home. So in order to kind of cap off the down payment, we're thinking about withdrawing $3,000 to $5,000 from our Roth IRA. And my understanding is that this is penalty-free if it's for our first home purchase, but I was wondering if there's any other considerations I should think of when making this withdrawal. Also, from a logistics standpoint, I was wondering if there's anything that I need to make the company that we have the account with aware of in order to do so. Do we need to call them or make any sort of declaration that we're actually withdrawing for this purpose so that we're not penalized for it? Appreciate your show, and thanks in advance. Listen to the podcast.
All right, that's a great question. He's trying to take money out of his Roth IRA to help finish up his down payment on his house. You can take whatever you put into a Roth IRA, you can take out tax-free because you already paid taxes on it. Now, you can't take the growth of that those assets out, but you can put the money you put in out. So it shouldn't be an issue, and your broker might have some sort of rules or something that they want to know. Just let them know what you're doing, and they'll let you know if they need additional information. But if it's just a couple thousand dollars, I would say not a big deal. But I would always recommend that you avoid having to do that, or avoid taking money out of your retirement accounts. I don't say at all costs, but most costs. A couple thousand, not a big deal. All right. Now let's get into, it's tax day. I think this is interesting. This is great. The average household pays $13,000 in income tax for 2015. $13,000. It's federal income tax. Most people don't feel it because it comes out of their paycheck. Right? Comes out of their paycheck. But where does that money go? They think I have a refund. Think, oh, I get a refund. No, it's not a refund. It's you just overpaid. Okay? It's not a refund. But you paid $13,000 on average. So let's break down where that money goes. How much do you think goes to health programs like Medicare, Medicaid, health programs? That's the highest percentage. 28.7% of the federal budget goes to health programs. What's next? Well, the military-industrial complex is gigantic, and so that sucks up about 25.4% of the budget. Think about that. Between health programs and military spending, it's sucking up 54% of our budget. Then you added interest on the national debt. That's 13.7. So right there, you're talking about 67%, 68% of our budget is health programs, military spending, and interest on the national debt. Isn't that crazy? So when people talk about, oh, we need to reduce spending, we need to reduce our deficit, well, you're not going to get anywhere unless you cut Medicare or military spending. Because interest on the national debt, you can't cut. I mean, it's what it is, and it's only increasing. 8% goes to unemployment and labor programs. 5% goes to veteran benefits. 4.6% goes to food and agriculture programs. 3.6% goes to education programs. Think about that. We're spending almost 29% of our federal budget on health programs and about 3.5% on education programs. 2.9 goes to government expenses. Probably talking about running the government, running different, probably not running departments, but running the federal government, like the White House, the Pentagon, or White House, the Capitol Building, etc., paying salaries to government employees. 1.9% on housing and community service. 1.6 on energy and environmental programs. 1.5% on international affairs. 1.2% on transportation funding. And just 1.1% on science funding. So that's where your tax dollars are going on this tax day. I think it's important for every American to understand where your money's going. Now we're here live, 4 to 5 Pacific time, each and every weekday. But we can take your call anytime at 888-99-CHART. If you're not with us then, call our 24-hour listener line.
Hi, my name is Tim. I listen to you almost every day driving home. I have a question, and I've heard you say it a few times on the show, but while I'm driving, I never get a chance to write it down. I'd like to know, see if you could go over exactly how you put a value on a stock. You have a little formula, and it'd be helpful to me. I'm a new investor, and I would just be interested in hearing that one more time, how you explain it, so I can write it down and use it. Thanks, and I love your show. Bye-bye.
All right, putting a value on a stock, that's the most difficult thing you can do in the market. So it's not simple, but it can be simple. And the quick and dirty method is growth rate of earnings times earnings per share. Very quick and dirty. Is it perfect? No. Is any valuation metric perfect? No. There's book value. There's cash flow methods, discounted cash flow methods. There's a lot of ways to value a stock. But that's the quick and dirty method. But don't think it's gospel. It's just a place to start. Now you're listening to Invest Talk. I'm registered investment advisor Justin Klein. And I'm here to answer your questions. Our Invest Talk anytime number is 888-99-CHART. We are going into our last 10 minutes of the show. So if you're going to call, call in now at 888-99-CHART. All right, let's go to James in New York. How are you doing, James?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing fantastic. What can I do for you?
I wanted to maybe review the following ticker that I recently, I'd say in the last month, initiated a position in. Ticker symbol RCII, Rent-A-Center. Mm-hmm. I got involved with them at three different price points, once at $13.50, once at $14.50, and then finally again at $15.50. I just wanted to maybe understand maybe some upside potential that may have. I think maybe there's some good value behind that, but I just wanted to maybe review the potential upside that they have in the future.
Well, it certainly bounced off some fantastic support around $10 a share. So I think that was one of the catalysts for this big jump. And it looks somewhat sustainable, at least in the medium term. Are you looking as a trade for the next 6 months? Or are you trying to own it for the next 3, 5, 10 years?
No, I intend to trade that. Mm-hmm. My thinking is if it reaches $20, I would then sell at that price point, if that's even realistic expectations about RCII.
Yeah, I do think that their $20 is a good level to start taking off position. I think I get as high as maybe $21.50 or so. But it's going to have a lot of work to do to get past that. And about $23.50 would be huge, huge resistance. So between the $20 and $25 range is where you're going to run into a ton of resistance starting at $20, and a lot of different levels between $20 and $25. I don't imagine this getting past $25. So I like what your target is, a 25% upside, 30% upside from here is, I think, realistic. And it's a name that is still pretty cheap, pays a decent dividend while you're waiting, 2.1% But it's certainly a name that you don't want to be a long-term investor. But in the short term, I think it's actually looking pretty good.
And they're about ready to announce earnings very soon, I think maybe in the next 2 weeks. Do you think that we'll continue to see a rise once that happens?
Well, it's been beaten down, so expectations are certainly low. Earnings are always a gamble. You don't know exactly what the earnings are going to be in the past, and you also don't know what they're going to guide to. You know, guidance is always more important than the number that happened over the last quarter or so. Right, it's about what's happening in the future. That's what investors look at. And right now, Rent-A-Center's having some issues, and they're been beaten down. So I think the upside potential from earnings is probably higher than the downside potential.
Okay, very good.
Thanks for calling, James. Let's go to Will in San Diego. How you doing, Will?
Oh, pretty good. I know the hour is late. I just wanted a quick rundown on ticker symbol DLR. Is it overvalued? And should I wait on it?
All right, you're looking at Digital Realty. This is a name we've owned in the past for our clients, but we have since sold it. Yields about 4%. Earnings are strong. It's had a really, really strong run. I think it's a little overvalued. Is it dramatically overvalued? I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't be like, oh my God, you're going to need to dump this. Are you looking to buy it or you own it?
Well, I'm looking to buy it, but I kind of agree with you. It's probably not the time to buy, and maybe I should just wait.
Yeah, I would wait on it. You know, it's certainly overvalued. Operating earnings is only 3.2%. Its payout ratio is pretty high. It's not making enough, really, to pay that dividend, and that means they're taking on more debt, which I don't like. Their return on equity has always been in the single digits. So I think it's just too expensive at these levels. If it gets back into the low 70s, that's where I would be more excited about it. But right now in the high 80s, about 88 and change, the close today, I would say it's too expensive.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot.
No problem. Thanks for calling. That was DLR, Digital Realty, and the one before that was RCII, Rent-A-Center. Thanks for all of your calls on this Monday. I hope I could answer some great questions. I hope everyone else got some insightful answers. And I always like broad questions, though. So if you ever have any broad market-related questions, economy-related questions, retirement-related questions, I love those. So please bring those on the next The Best Talk. Now, our time is up for the hour. A reminder, Steve will be doing individual retirement reviews via Skype and telephone on April 19th. So to get on the schedule for that day, just go to investtalk.com, click on the Invest Talk tab. I'm Justin Klein, Executive Vice President of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP, thank you for listening today. So let's meet up again on the next Invest Talk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.